And we're going to continue looking at this idea of the spiritual gifts. And we've looked at a number of them. And as I mentioned last week, there is going to be a test at the end. So you may want to pay attention here. But one of the things as I look at these things, and as I go through them step by step, we realize that that everyone has a special spiritual gift that is their strength. Now, you might have another gift in here that is a little subordinate to your strong spiritual gift. But we hope that as we go through here that you understand what and are beginning to decide what is your spiritual gift. Again, that's what the test is really going to help you out on a little bit on that. But also, I know what it is. But then as we go along, you'll understand what other people's spiritual gifts are. Maybe you can already size other people up and said, yeah, they got that spiritual gift of this. They got it of giving, or they got it of mercy, or they got it of prophecy. They got these spiritual gifts. And so in doing that, you realize what their strengths are and what their weaknesses are. And then it again provides us with understanding about everybody and how the body of Christ works. How we work at a high level then when everyone is using their spiritual gifts for the work of the Lord. And so this evening we're looking at the gift of leadership, and we're actually going to spend a few weeks on this. Next week we won't be discussing this. We got another topic because of our 8th anniversary that we'll be looking at. But we're going to spend at least 2 weeks upon the gift of leadership. And the book of Romans 12, says if we are leaders, we should do our best. And it goes on to use the idea of ruling in Romans, the 12th chapter, when it talks about leadership. It carries that kind of idea. Over in 1 Corinthians, the 12th chapter, where we have the other list of spiritual gifts, the idea that is carried there has to do with administration or government. I ask some questions for you. Would the children of Israel ever left Egypt and crossed the Red Sea without the leader Moses? Were they ever conquered the promised land without Joshua? Were they rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem without Nehemiah? How did David go from being a shepherd all the way to being a king? Well, it was leadership. And how did Joseph rise to the top like cream even when he was thrown into the pit and in the prison? It's leadership that took him to the palace. But what took Nehemiah from the lavish luxuries of the palace and then placed him on the construction site? It was the same thing. It was leadership. When we look for the definition here of leadership, and again in Romans 12, the basic concept has to do with ruler. It literally means headship. And in 1 Corinthians 12, the government's... comes from the word, when it uses the word for governments, it comes from the word which means a pilot or a helmsman, such as steering a ship into a harbor, and you're steering it into a ship to avoid the rocks and the obstacles, and that is the idea there. The spatial ability to lead, to administrate, and organize a portion of the body of Christ in a particular area of service. Every car needs a driver. Every ship needs a captain. Every business needs a boss. The body of Christ needs a head in each particular area of ministry that the church has. They need a leader in each one of those. It matters not how many gifted musicians we have or how many accompanists we have if there's not a leader that is conducting it all. It doesn't make any difference how many children we have if we don't have a leader that is pulling them together and is teaching them somewhere. Somebody has to be responsible. Somebody has to be accountable. And thank God for how He's covered this here at Joy and how He's continuing to cover that and how He's going to continue to do that in the coming days as our needs grow greater and greater. This evening we're looking at Nehemiah because he is an example of leadership. I love the book of Nehemiah because of the leadership principles that are there. We have gone through the book of Nehemiah on other occasions. We may go through that book of Nehemiah again, because it is a favorite book that I have, particularly on leadership and overcoming obstacles. But the thing that we find is that leaders think differently than followers. It's not a personality type. It doesn't mean, you know, if you're an extrovert and you're overbearing and driven, that you're a leader. Yeah, I've been around a lot of those type of people. But many gifted leaders are quiet and unassuming and laid back. And leaders come in all shapes and sizes and colors and flavors. And so it's not a style. I used to think a leader had to be a dictatorial person that said, you know, my way or the highway style was the way it went. And it's not so. A matter of fact, that's one of the worst styles of leadership. It's not about my way or your way, but it's about the body of Christ all looking for God's way. And there are so many different varieties and mixtures of leaders, but there's one thing that all true leaders have in common. It is the way they think. There's a mindset, a way of thinking that is different than everyone else's. And we look at this in Nehemiah, the second chapter, and verse 12. You know, leadership here can be a very lonely place. It says here, Nehemiah, I got up during the night and left my house. And I took some men with me without telling anyone that I thought God what I thought God wanted me to do for the city. The only animal I took was the donkey that I rode on. Many times in leadership, it is a very lonely place. People just assume because a person is in leadership that they have all sorts of close friends. And that isn't always true. In fact, it isn't even generally true that people in leadership responsibilities have a lot of close friends. We see also here in verses 13 through 15 that the other thing that they do is they just view the situation. They survey it. They get a vision as to what needs to be done after looking over the situation. Says, I went through the Valley Gate on the west, then the south past Dragon Spring before coming to Garbage Gate. And as I rode along, I took a good look at the crumpled walls of the city and the gates that had been torn down and burned. On the east side of the city, I headed north to Fountain Gate and King's Pool. But then the trail became too narrow for my donkey. So I went down to Kidron Valley and looked at the wall from there. Then before daylight, I returned to the city through the Valley Gate. Verse 16 then, none of the city officials knew what I had in mind. And I had not even told any of the Jews, nor the priests, the leaders, the officials, or any other Jews who would be helping in the work. Here is some more loneliness that goes on and some deep thought here as I began to formulate a program, a direction for everyone to go here. In verse 17 that says, but when I got back, I said to them, Jerusalem is truly in a mess. The gates have been torn down and burned and everything is in ruins. We must rebuild the city wall so that we can again take pride in our city. Where everyone else sees obstacles, this leader as seeing opportunities. That was the case here for Nehemiah, and it is a principle of leaders. They think differently. They see problems as potential. They see things that are intangible before them that are going to be tangible. They see them in their mind as a tangible thing. And Nehemiah is living by these principles. That's the way it's going to be. That he sees it, that it's going to happen. It has to be visualized before it is ever materialized. And so Nehemiah was doing that. But there are four ways leaders think differently. First, continually. Leaders think when convenient. Followers think when it's convenient. You know, when they're forced to. Leaders think while lying in bed. Their bodies are resting, but their wheels are still turning. They write on scraps of paper in the night, and they get up and they go to the computer. While driving, they may look like they're daydreaming. You might go past them on the road and they not even acknowledge you. Might do that in a store somewhere. They're walking down the store and you walk right by them and they don't even pay any attention to you. Because they're thinking about the next step that they're going to be involved in. They're laying out a vision. They might be in a restaurant and they said, "Oh, give me another napkin here. I got to write this down." You know, often you'll hear a leader say, "Think with me," or they might even challenge you and say, "Well, what in the world were you thinking?" You know, here. Second thing is that they think outside the box. Leaders don't stay within the lines all the time. There was a great commercial on TV exactly like this. You might remember, may not remember, but the little boy that got the Hershey syrup container and the syrup apparently was all gone. What did he do? He took and he poured the milk in the container and shook it up and down and poured it out, and he had chocolate milk. He knew that there was more in there. It was just a matter of coming up with a process to get it out of there. While others would say that it was all gone and they'd go get another one, he was looking at it from a different angle. Leaders are creative. And so, you know, I'm not very creative. Well, that's probably true. It's probably true for most of us. You realize by the time that you're 40 years old, that they tell us that we only have about 2% creativity ability in us. In fact, when we're 30 years old, there's only about 2% of creativity ability within us. Or we only use about 2% of our mind in a creative way. It's probably maybe a better way to say that. When we're 20, we only use about 2% of our mind in a creative fashion. Actually, when we're 10 years old, we only use 2% of our mind in a creative fashion. When we're 7, we'll actually use 10% of our mind in a creative fashion. But when we're 5 years old, we use 80% of our mind being creative. Now, what happened at 5? We went to school and we were told to stay in the lines, didn't we? Stay in the lines. Be logical. Be practical. This is the way that we do this. This is the only way. Don't be different. You know, other kids will laugh at you. I used to straight me to no end with all this wonderful math. They give you a math problem, and you might come back in with the right answer, but no, it was checked wrong because you didn't do it in the manner in which they wanted you to do it. The way that you got there was more important than the right answer. And it's true. That's the way that they do that stuff. But I always thought the right answer was the important thing. And some people were very creative in the method that they applied to come to the right answer. But you see, every time we turn around, they stifle our creativity. And therefore, we do everything just the way we have been programmed to do. As much as you'd like to think that you're unique and you're different and you don't do that, I ain't got news for you. You don't. Most of your life is lived under somebody else's program that they have given to you. Leaders think outside the box. Try something that you've never tried before in a different way than you've ever done it in the past. I said one time at a funeral, I was talking about where a certain person always sat in the church. And I said, you know, pastors keep attendance that way because people just sat in the same place time after time, week after week. And I could go home on a Sunday afternoon and I'd close my eyes and I could tell who was there, wasn't there, because they sat in the same place. I said, if you want to fool the pastor, move around the church. Sit in a different place every week. But you see, we're not even creative there, are we? We'll sit in the same place. We'll take the same route home. You see, the creativity has been taken out of us. The Wright brothers built a plane and they laughed them right off the beach into the air, you know. They laughed at Alexander Graham Bell right over the phone. Know how long the walls of Jericho were broken down here before Nehemiah got there? Before Nehemiah got there and said, let's fix it. You know how long those walls are down? They were down 70 years. For decades, the Jews saw those broken down walls and no one was motivated to do something about it. God had to raise up a leader. And as they looked at those broken down walls, they would say, it's just the way things are. You can't fight the city hall. We just have to learn to accept it. But a leader came along who dared to dream, who thought differently, who thought outside the box. He dared to dream, and he shared his dream, and he prepared his dream, and he repaired the wall. A third thing is they think in terms of continual progress. Down the road, ahead of everyone else, they look farther in the future than others. They see new Sunday school classes. They see new building projects. They have visions that are way down the line from others. They have this wonderful gift. If what you did yesterday still looks big to you, you haven't done much today. If what you did yesterday still looks big to you, you haven't done much today. Before Nehemiah came along, someone made an effort to repair the wall. A little here and a little there, you know, but not consistent at all. Only in spurts, and it deteriorated quickly as they repaired it. Leaders don't bask in present success. They're already thinking of the new project. And when you're putting on the cap on one project, they're already discussing next year's. Fourth thing is that leaders think in terms of success. They think in terms of success. There's five things that they assume here under this. First, they assume it'll work. There's plenty of naysayers out there that'll tell you this won't work. You know? They'll tell you that you can't do it that way. You know what I found out a long time ago? If somebody doesn't tell you can't do it that way, you probably can. I did that one time when repairing something. I took it apart, I put it together and made it operate, and later on, somebody says, you know, you can't do that. You can't do that. You can't take that apart and do that and put that back there. I said, oh, I'm glad I didn't know that before I did it, because now I've done it, and it saved me a lot of money. You see, there are a lot of people out there that tell you that it can't be done. But a leader just assumes it's going to work. The second thing here is that they'll think it'll work out. You know, when they're backed against the wall, when they're in a pinch, they'll say, you know, it's going to work out. It's just a matter of one of those other things that we'll eventually get to, of being patient. But it's all going to work out. They have that confident feeling. They say they don't panic. When it doesn't work and doesn't materialize right away, it's going to work out. Third, they just assume people will follow. It's just kind of built into them that they're going to come. And for this reason, insecure people don't make good leaders, because they can't risk failure and they can't put themselves on the line. Another thing that leaders assume is that setbacks will occur. They're not idealists with their heads in the clouds, but they know that challenges will arise, and they're not afraid to take them on head first. You know, that there will be setbacks along the way. There will be some discouragements if you allow them to be that. But it certainly doesn't always work quite automatically on the timetable that you wish that it did, because things happen. Another thing that a leader assumes is that resources will come. That resources will come. Knows that where God guides, He provides. What God wills, He builds. You know? That's all God's problem. If God's in it, He'll take care of it. I shouldn't worry about it. Leaders think differently. They think continually. They think outside the box. They think in realms of progress and success. Now, we're going to do much more on leadership, including the dangers of it, and there are many, the next time we take up this topic of leadership. But we need to pray for the leaders of the church, of our homes, of our nation. You know, not just me, certainly, but we need to pray for the people who teach here, for the people who work with the music program, for the people who work with the podcast. We need to be praying for all these people all the time. It ought to be a matter of at least a daily checklist that we have, that we're praying for all these people, because we want them to be successful in the Lord. And the way they'll be successful in the Lord is if you'll continually lift them up in prayer. That's your responsibility for the success of the whole body functioning together.